and welcome to this morning session. It is my pleasure to introduce Günter Last from Karlsruhe Institute of Technology in Germany. And he's going to speak about normal approximation of geometric Poisson functionals.
Thank you, Pierre. Thank you, François, for inviting me to this wonderful place. I'm enjoying your company, the company of your group, and the whole workshop, really. So it's a pleasure. And it's also a pleasure to present some joint work based actually on two papers, namely one together with Daniel and Matthias, who are both from my place in Karlsruhe, and the second one is joined with Giovanni and again with Matthias Schulte. And I would like to start with some notation and also with some results for general Poisson processes, although the focus of this lecture will be on the applications. But in order to explain how we get our results, I would like to introduce some of the basic concepts, partially repeating some of the stuff Giovanni explained yesterday. So that's basically just notation. I denote by eta a Poisson process on a general state space X. You might think of the Euclidean space RD or of some space of geometric objects, as we will encounter later in this lecture. And the Poisson process is governed by just one parameter, which is, however, an abstract thing. It's a measure on this space called intensity measure. And it comes with two properties, the property of independent increments, and the increments are Poisson distributed random variables, so integer valued, possibly taking the value infinity. And this measure lambda of B, this is just the mean number of points falling into a set B. Okay. So, a basic object in the analysis of not only Poisson processes, but of more general point processes is the difference operators and its iterations. So, we start with a function f given on the configuration space Rn. So n is the set of all sigma finite counting measures on our underlying space. And f is a function. So later on in the talk, we will see many functions of a geometric nature. A very simple function is just the number of points of mu in a set B, but it could be the squared of this number, it could be something more tricky. And I'm adding a point x at the configuration, and this is a measure theoretical notation. This is the Dirac measure in x, so mu plus delta x is adding a point to the point x. And the value of the function f changes. And now I look at the change, and I call this difference operator. It's a sort of discrete gradient of the function in the direction x, and it's also called sometimes at one cost operator. Now we can iterate this just as we can iterate the partial derivatives n times. So for any x1 up to xn, we can do this n times. And what we get then for fixed x1 up to xn is again a function f on this configuration space. And for convenience, we make these two definitions. And now, if we plug in the random object into this difference operators of order n, we get a random variable for fixed x1 up to xn. We take the expectation. And because this operator is symmetric in x1 up to xn, it's easy to see by an explicit inclusion-exclusion formula, just as derivatives are symmetric, this expectation is symmetric, so it's a symmetric function. And moreover, if the function f is square integrable with respect to the distribution of eta, in other words, if the expectation of f of eta squared is finite, then all these functions are square integrable with respect to the n-fold product of the underlying intensity measure. So that's the notation for square integrable function with respect to the n-th product of lambda. And the little s here, subscript s, stands for symmetric. Okay, and in the stochastic analysis on Poisson spaces, the nth order difference operators, or rather their expectations, show up in the classical Wiener Ito Keras expansion, which is based on stochastic integrals. And I don't give the definition of a stochastic integral. Giovanni has given one in the case of the Euclidean space. I just recall the properties. First of all, if you have a function which is symmetric and square integrable with respect to the nth-fold product of lambda, then the nth-fold E Wiener Ito integral associates with this function a square integrable random variable. So it's a mapping from the space L to lambda n into L to p. And these two properties hold. First of all, it's an isometry. If I have here a G and I have an H and we have the same N, then the scalar product of these two guys, by the way, the expectation of these things is zero, so it's really the covariance here, is up to this combinatorial factor. The scalar product of, G and H are not assumed to be symmetric, so we take the symmetrization here. So if G and A are geometric from the outset, then this is an isometry. And moreover, if M and N are different, these stochastic integrals are orthogonal. Whatever you take here, always orthogonal. The G tilde is here a symmetrization. Okay, and the Wiener Ito Keras expansion says the following. If I have a function f, which is square integrable, and which is a function of the underlying Poisson space, a Poisson process, the space of such functionals is denoted by L to eta, and any such function is really a function, passwise defined function of eta. And then f can be written as an orthogonal series, because all these Wiener Ito integrals are mutually orthogonal, of Wiener Ito integrals. And the convergence is an L2, and that's a classical result by Wiener Ito, and another Ito has shown for Poisson processes on the line that actually these kernels, as these functions are being called in stochastic analysis, are given by the expected difference operators of order n. So it's a rather explicit formula, and in a paper together with Matthews, I could have mentioned him as well on the first page, we have proved that this is true actually for any Poisson process on any space. No talk. It's very useful to have this explicit representation of these Wiener Ito kernels. Okay, so the title of my talk is Normal Approximation of, Geometric Poisson Functionals. And the method we use is the so-called Meyerbeer-Stein method. Giovanni has explained it yesterday. And in order to express the Stein bounds in terms of Meyerbeer operators, I have to explain, at least very briefly, what operators turn up in these bounds. So first of all, we have already seen the nth order difference operator, and I use a capital D to denote really the random object now. So if I have a function f with a representative little f, which means capital F is the function f of the underlying Poisson process, then I'm using this definition here. And that's convenient because then dnf is a function of omega, the underlying probability space, and x1 up to xn as before. That's just notation. It's counterintuitive, it's true. But this difference operator has an interpretation as a Meyerbeer operator, at least under an additional integrability assumption. That's not always satisfied. The space of all Poisson functionals, as we call them, having this property is the domain of the Maya-Weng difference operator. And the reason is that under this condition, this here converges in L2, and one can prove that it's actually the same. It's the same as the pathwise defined difference operator, and that's one of the advantages. You know, working with Poisson processes rather than with Gaussian families may have some advantages and sometimes some disadvantages. That's really an advantage. We have the difference operator explicitly given, even for general functions f. We don't need this integrability assumption here. So that's the first operator. We are going to use the difference operator. The second one, the second one is the Kabanovsk-Rochot integral. Again, we have seen it yesterday very briefly. In stochastic analysis, what is a classical stochastic analysis integral? It takes a random process into a random variable. So if I have a random process, x of t of omega, I can integrate this under certain assumptions on x. In classical stochastic analysis, for instance, predictability or adaptedness with respect to some Brownian motion or even with respect to some general semi-martingale. Okay? What I get as a result is a random variable. Now, you can do this in a very abstract setting, and you don't even need measurability properties of the integrants. You just need integrability conditions. And that's a brilliant idea going back to Skorohod and the Gaussian. Actually, Yuri Kobanov once explained it goes back to Itsuda, a Japanese mathematician. And in parallel, due to Yuri Kobanov for the Poisson process. And that's the definition. And I don't go into the details here. I just it's enough to know that this delta is an abstract sort of stochastic integral, and it takes a random function into a random variable. And the nice thing now is, again, as we have seen yesterday, is this duality formula or formula of partial integration, as you wish, which says the following. If I have a function f, I can take its derivative. So I get a random field, a random process. And let's take another random process h, which is in the domain of the Kabanov integral. Okay? Then this here is this is the scalar product in the space omega times x, equipped with the measure p times intensity measure. It turns out that's the same as the scalar product of f, partial integration, and delta of h in L2 of p. That's really a key formula in the whole theory. So we have a partial integration result. Again, in the Poisson world, there's a way to interpret this stochastic integral really pathwise, but we don't need it, and so I skip it. And there's a third operator. Again, we have seen it yesterday, which is the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck generator. That's the abstract definition of this object. And we have to know it takes a random variable into a random variable, assuming some, again, integrability assumption. And that's the definition, and the inverse L to the minus 1 of L is given by that. It's called Ornstein-Uhlenbeck generator because it's really the generator of some semi-group. And actually, in the Poisson world, it's not just a semi-group. We have a pathwise description of the underlying evolution, and Giovanni has alluded to this yesterday, using a death birth procedure. You just thin points independently, and then you fill in points again independently by adding. Okay. Now, the topic of the talk is normal approximation, and so in this talk, as yesterday, we are using two distances, namely the Wasserstein distance, considered as a distance actually between the distributions of some two random variables, y1 and y2, defined in this way, and also the Kolmogorov distance, which is just the supremum distance between the distribution function. Okay, and there's a crucial result here, I would like to say it's a seminal result, expressing the Wasserstein distance between a function of the underlying Poisson process under an additional integrability assumption with mean zero and the normal standard normal distribution in terms of Malyavenk operators. So I've explained what this is, I've explained what this is, I have explained what this is. An L to the minus 1 is a tricky object. I will say a few more words about this later. And I have explained all these terms here. And there's an interpretation of this. Also, in particular, the expectation of this guy here is 1. So we better normalize F so as to get variance 1. And the fact that the expectation of this one is easy to prove, and it's one version of a so-called covariance identity. And there are many versions around, also martingale versions, but basically it's always the same formula, it's just the expectation of this is the variance. Okay, and then there is an additional term, additional, when it comes to the comparison with the Gaussian world, which is reflecting somehow the discrete nature of the underlying Poisson process. I will get back to this. And we have seen the proof yesterday. Basically, Giovanni has shown us how to use partial integration and just the fact that L time minus 1 is the identity, how to prove this result, plus some Taylor formula. Any questions so far? Okay. So for the Kolmogorov distance, sorry for that transparency, you don't need to read all the details here. The Kolmogorov distance is a more tricky object because it involves, as we learned yesterday again, it involves non-smooth functions. And there's a result by Matthias going back to 2012, which is expressing the Kolmogorov distance between, maybe I forgot to mention that F should have expectation 0, which expresses the distance, Kolmogorov distance, between a Poisson random variable and a standard normal. And we see the same operators, but the structure of the bound is more complicated. For our applications later, this bound will be sufficient, but we have learned yesterday that there is an improvement due to Eichelsbacher and Taylor, very recent one. Okay. Now, how to use these abstract bounds? We have to deal with the difference operator. Okay, we know how to do this because these are defined very explicitly. And we have to deal with L to the minus 1 because L to the minus 1 shows up in all these upper bounds. Now I'll show you two ways how to do it. The first way is just to take this abstract bound and to look what happens to both summons. And both bounds involve L to the minus 1, which is based on the complete chaos expansion. L to the minus 1 is some n. Also, if the function f is given in this chaos expansion, then you have to multiply, you have to blow up each summand by n. So it involves everything. And in the Boolean, for the Boolean model, it turns out that such a result is sufficient to conclude the central limit theorem with basically the optimal rates. Namely, I have to look at these tensor products of the kernel functions of order m. I take this twice, and of order n, again taken twice. I will explain this in a minute. And I have to bound this by some constant a, some constant b to the power m plus n, divided by m factorial squared and n factorial squared. Don't worry about the m factorial squared or the n factorial squared because we have seen an explicit formula for the fn. The fn are the expected difference operator divided by n factorial. So that's what we see here. Okay. And I will give you maybe an idea of the proof. But once we have this here, we can bound the Wasserstein distance by this infinite series, and it turns out by a proper choice of B and A, that's okay for the Boolean model and probably for other models as well. So how can I explain this thing here? Well, it's not here. To explain it, I have to go back to the Picardy et al. Bound. Sorry. It contains, maybe we take a brief look again. It contains these expressions here. Okay, this can be bounded by Jensen's inequality. This is bounded by the expectation of the square of this thing, and then taking the square root. So that's the variance. Okay, and now you see there's a square involved here, and any f has its own, this f has a Kerr-Kerr expansion, this has a Kerr expansion as well. So it's easy to guess that in order to control these things, we need to control just the orders of, we have to control the integrals of fn, little fn squared, or tensor squared, and fm tensor squared. Okay, this is just comes out if you write down the explicit chaos expansion, doesn't need to know that fm is of this explicit form, and use the orthogonality relations. And then you see what you need to control. Okay, now, what is the sigma here? That's the following. At some stage in the computation, you need to compute the moments. Namely, you have two functions f and g, not the same functions f and g, but for simplicity I keep f and g. And I take the m's Wiener Ito integral of f and the n's Wiener Ito integral of g, and I square it both. So I take the expectation of the product of two squares of higher order Wiener Ito integrals. We are in the Poisson case. So what we do is we write the first function here, f. It comes with m variables. Then we write again the function f. It comes with m variables. Then the function g with n variables and the function g with n variables. Then we multiply, and then we remember, okay, the stochastic Wiener Ito integral is basically a sum. It's a compensated sum, so I have to integrate with respect to the nth fold product of the Poisson process. We know how to do this using multivariate Mecke. Okay. So, and if I use multivariate Mecke equation, which is a standard tool in stochastic geometry and point process analysis, I see that I need to take at most one variable from each of the functions. At most one. This is basically what here, what happens here, namely this sigma, this is a permutation of 2m plus 2n, it's a partition of 2m and 2n variables, and this little sigma means I have to identify variables. Yeah, in this Poisson sum, how we do this in stochastic geometry, we sum over all entries with different things, then pairwise identical triples, and so on. And this is exactly what is happening here. This is the sigma, and we need only special sigma, which is good. The most important property, I need any one variable, at most one variable from each line. So it looks complicated, but it works. There's a second way we found recently in our joint work with Giovanni and Matthias, which we call, inspired by Chatterjee, a second-order Poincaré inequality. And time is running, so we have seen this inequality yesterday. I wish to point out that in contrast to what we have just seen, these upper bounds here only contain the first and the second order difference operator. no infinite chaos expansion anymore. It sort of disappeared. You have just the first and second order difference operator. And Giovanni has explained why the fact that these numbers are small points to the fact that the random variable f, which is some Poisson random variable satisfying some integrability assumption and which is standardized, is close to a standard normal. And the reason is that these two expressions somehow indicate, yeah, okay, the f is an affine function, close to an affine function of the Poisson functional. Okay, it's a linear function because we have expectation zero. Then we are close to a linear function. Linear functions of a Poisson process are Wiener Ito integrals of first order. These are linear functions. And if we go back to the abstract bound, we see that the distance between a first order Wiener Ito integral and a normal distribution is controlled by a certain moment of the difference operator. So that's a heuristic explanation, but to be honest, I mean, I believe from the very beginning that, okay, then it might be possible to control the distances in terms of first and second order difference operators. But what is still a surprise for me is that in all cases we have investigated so far, it gives the optimal rates, which is nice. There are certainly cases where it doesn't give the optimal rates, but so far it's okay. Now, I have still enough time to discuss two benchmark models of stochastic geometry. The first one is the Boolean model, or maybe it's better to call it Poisson Boolean model. So we start off with a bunch of points coming from a Poisson process in a window, as you will see now. And then we place around each ball in each point independently some random object. For instance, a ball or a circle here in this case, a disk with a random radius. So you see here still the points here, and around each point we place independently of the underlying Poisson process and independently for different points of the Poisson process, random disks. Or, later, more general convex bodies. And then we take the union. So you don't see where the... sometimes you see where the individual points are, sometimes you don't, because some of the balls can... disks can be completely covered. That's called a Boolean model or coverage model, or there are other names for this. Maybe it's better to call it Poisson Boolean model. Anyway, that's a basic object of stochastic geometry, and it's a benchmark model. So, of course, we are interested in the distributional properties of such an object, and to do so, it's good, first of all, to give an exact definition. So now we are doing the following. We are looking at a Poisson process on the space calligraphic D, calligraphic K, index D, of convex bodies. So this is a nice space. We can equip it, for instance, with the Hausdorff distance. It's a wonderful space to work with. It's a huge space. Okay, and eta is now a Poisson process on this space. And we assume that its intensity measure is translation invariant, which means this here, and k plus x, what is it? K is a convex body, and k plus x is the shift of this convex body. So I shift every point of this k by x. And there are two parameters here, namely gamma, which is the intensity of the underlying center process, if you like, and q, which is called shape distribution. And we assume that the empty set does not occur, and this is a natural integrability assumption, which is, by the way, equivalent to the so-called locally finiteness of lambda. So that's a little bit more fancy way to describe the underlying Poisson process of a Boolean model. If you prefer, you can start with a Poisson process in RD, and then you mark the points independently by grains according to some grain distribution. You attach the grains to every of these to all of these points, and you take the union. It's the same thing. But that's not the Boolean model. That's the Poisson process underlying the construction. The Boolean model is the union of all grains in this Poisson process. And because the intensity measure is stationary, the Poisson process is stationary in the usual, in the standard sense of shifting the particles, and hence also the random closed set here Boolean model is stationary. And on the geometric side, if I intersect the Boolean model with a fixed convex observation window W, then I have a finite union of convex bodies. In convex geometry, a finite union of convex bodies is called, is said to be an element of the convex ring. Ring because, in contrast to the space of convex bodies, it's now closed with respect to the union. Okay, so before discussing distributional properties, we should start with some mean value analysis, and because I don't assume that all of you are familiar with the basic theory of the Boolean model, I recall some of the fundamental, classical, and still very beautiful facts. Okay, I hope you don't mind. So, assume we have the Boolean model. But in fact, this is a more general result. But to have something concrete in mind, let's think set is the Poisson Boolean model. And we take our favorite geometric functional. For instance, the volume. It's an easy functional. Or the surface content. Or something more tricky. If you intersect the Boolean model with R times the observation window, R is getting large in the end. So the observation window is growing. Then we get something in the convex ring. So we should assume that our geometric functional is able to associate values with elements of the convex ring. Volume, surface, fine. Okay, we take the expectation, and it should, because of stationarity, actually, it should behave proportional to the volume of the observation window, and indeed it does. There exists a limit under certain assumptions on psi, namely additivity, which is just saying that the psi of the union of two sets in the convex ring is A and B, say, is psi of A plus psi of B minus psi A intersected B. Translation invariance and some locally boundedness condition. And moreover, there is an explicit expression for this, semi-explicit, which contains the upper right boundary of the unit cube. So at first glance, one might think just the first term is the limit, but it's not true. If you have general additive functionals, you have to correct, because you can't decompose your space into closed cubes. You have to take half open cubes, and this plays a role. Moreover, due to ergodicity, there's a passwise version of this convergence. Okay, the interesting functionals in convex geometry, and we will learn more about these functions later, I'm sure, are the intrinsic volumes. And there are several ways to define intrinsic volumes. And the easiest way, in my opinion, is just by the classical Steiner formula, which is saying the following. If I have a convex body, and I look at the set of points of at most distance r from this convex body, which is the same as the Minkowski sum of k plus r times a unit ball. So I'm really, maybe I should make at least one picture. So I start with a convex body, k, and then I have a distance parameter r, and the parallel set might look like this. Maybe it's even better to start with a polygon, because then you can see the formula even more clearly. Then you see that the area of this polygon, of the parallel set of this polygon, is the initial area plus length of the boundary times r, and then there's something missing, and the bits are missing are adding up to the whole circle. That's the proof in the polygon case. And the general case follows by approximation because good properties of the volume. Okay, so this is a polynomial in R, which means and the coefficients of these polynomials are up to normalization, which are the volumes of the Euclidean unit ball, the so-called intrinsic volumes. If K has a smooth boundary, these intrinsic volumes can be written as integrals over symmetric functions of the principal curvatures. So these are curvature-based notions, with the exception of Vd, which is the volume again, Vd minus 1, which is half the surface content, and V0, which is just 1 or 0, depending on whether K is empty or not. Not empty or not. Now, this is the definition on the convex, convex sets. To extend it to the convex ring, and we need to do this because we have the Boolean model, we can use additivity. It turns out that these intrinsic volumes are additive in this restricted sense. Namely, if I take two convex sets A and B such that the union is convex, then we have the additivity property. And there are famous and classic results from convex geometry saying that under some additional continuity assumptions, we can extend this function in a unique way. Uniqueness is clear because additive inclusion-exclusion principle. And these guys then, as functions on the convex ring, are still called intrinsic volumes. So we have the distribution of the typical grain, and this is concentrated on the space of convex bodies now, and we introduce Vi as the mean intrinsic volume of the typical grain. So Vd is the mean volume, V0 is just 1, Vd minus 1 is half the surface content, and so on. For instance, if we take as the function psi, this geometric function, just the volume, and if we look at the definition, we see that there is no limit, actually, because the expectation here, it is just proportional to the volume of R times W, and the factor of the factor we have to use is just the volume fraction. So if psi is the volume, then this density, as we call it, is just the volume fraction, which is, by the way, 1 minus e to the minus intensity gamma times Vd, which is can easily be seen from the Poisson properties. The next function to look at is the surface intensity, and there's a formula for this as well, and I explained this last week during an informal workshop, and I also explained last week this wonderful formula. So, I won't explain it again in detail, but what does it tell us? It's very, very interesting. We have our Poisson Boolean model, and we take any of these intrinsic volumes. For instance, now, a very interesting characteristic is the Euler characteristic, which is non-trivial for sets in the convex ring. It's in the plane, it's the number of connected components minus the number of holes. So it's a topological invariant. So even V0 is interesting. Actually, it's the most complicated case of this formula, the V0. We started at the beginning, it was the most simple case. In this formula, it's the most complicated case. So we have our Boolean model, take the J's intrinsic volume and take the expectation. And it turns out that it is given up to the factor 1 minus p and this constant which depends only on W. And 1 minus p, again, is just e to the minus intensity times Vd. It's a polynomial. I will show you the polynomial on the next slide. But the interesting fact here is that this polynomial is explicitly given. And if we divide now by the volume of W and let W grow to the whole space, then we see, at least if we take into account that the intrinsic volumes can be ignored, of lower order can be ignored with respect to the volume, which is a consequence of the homogeneity, by the way. It turns out only then one sees that only the D summand remains, and we get this wonderful formula due to Miles and Davy for the density of the J's intrinsic volume. However, I should mention it comes with an additional assumption, and this is isotropy. Isotropy means that this grain distribution Q is invariant under rotation. For instance, a spherical Boolean model is isotropic for geometric reasons, but there are many other isotropic models which are isotropic for probabilistic reasons. Actually, you can take any model and make it isotropic by uniform randomization. It's a wonderful formula. It's a consequence of the Margulis-Rosso formula for Poisson processes and the wonderful kinematic formula. Okay. This is the explicit formula for the polynomial. It's not too complicated, by the way. And there's a nice recursion in the background. Now, we have discussed mean values. Now we will go a step further and look at the second order structure. It's clear that we have to require more integrability assumptions. At least we should require that the second moments of the intrinsic volumes of the typical grain are finite. And sometimes we need up to the fourth moment of these things. One could start with the two-point correlation function of a random closed set, which is defined as the probability that two points, for instance, the origin and x, belong to the set. It's easy to see, easy exercise in Poisson processes, that this probability is given by this number where p is the volume fraction. 1 minus p is e to the minus gamma vd. And cd of x is the expected or the mean covariate gamma of the typical grain. That's the notion of convex geometry. If you have a convex set or a more general set and you shift it by x and you take the volume, you get a function of x. This is called covariate gamma of this function. Okay, in a random case, we have a random object, so we take the expectation. And this expectation shows up in the exponential here. And if we integrate this, we end up with a formula in the standard way, a formula for the variance. So if we divide now this formula by Vd of W, which is the volume of the observation window, and if we take the limit as the in radius, little r of W, goes to infinity, we see here that Cv of x divided by the volume of x goes to 1. One can prove this. And we have a formula for the asymptotic variance of this volume. So this is a trivial special case of this definition here. If I take two intrinsic volumes of order I and j, I apply these intrinsic volumes to set intersected with the observation window. I take the covariance. It scales like the volume of R times W. And it should converge somehow because of the short-range dependence of the Boolean model. And we call this the asymptotic covariances. And this is the easy example for such asymptotic covariances. Now, it turns out that these asymptotic covariances exist, and not only that, there's a rate of convergence, namely the rate of convergence is determined by the in-radius in this way. It's, by the way, optimal if you use here I equal to d, just the volume, so you take the variance of the volume, you can see it's bounded from below by some other constant divided by R of W. So this is the rate of convergence is optimal. And the way we do this, to prove this result, is the following. And I should mention this because here you can see now how additivity comes into play. And actually the proof works for more general additive functions, translation invariant functions. So this afternoon, in a little mini course, I will explain why such a formula is true. It's even more fundamental than the Wiener Itokaes expansion. If I have two general Poisson functionals, I can express the covariance between these two objects as an infinite series in this way. And we have seen these objects before. Okay, these are the expected difference operators. Now we are in a special situation. The phase space of the Poisson process is given as the space of all convex particles. So the functions we have to apply this result are given by this. We have take any additive functional psi, for instance, the intrinsic volume of order I, and we apply it to the union of all grains in this configuration mu intersected with W. And now, what happens with the difference operators? It's very easy. If you add, so this is our function now. What's the add one cost of such a function? If I add a further grain, then it means for the resulting union set that I have to take the union of the original set with the K. So it's the union of two guys, okay, intersected with W. So the psi of the union is the psi of the first thing plus the psi of the second thing minus psi of the intersection. So one of the two, the first or the second thing cancels because I have to take the difference by definition. And if I repeat this, I get this explicit formula. So the even in a passwise sense, no expectation involved here. So the nth order difference operator of such an additive function is given in this way, which is the key to all what is coming in the paper for the Boolean model. So now we have to take the expectation. And even if psi is a general additive function, it turns out it can be bounded in a nice way by the sum of the intrinsic volumes applied to the intersection of K1 up to Kn with W. And the good thing is here, all these sets are now convex. The intrinsic volumes are monotone. You can't see this directly from the definition, but they are monotone. And so we can play all sorts of integral geometric games here. For instance, we can apply such an integral geometric inequality, which is true for any psi. And I have to speed up a little bit. You can control in this way the nth order difference operators. And this is enough to use dominated convergence to conclude the convergence of this infinite series coming from the Fock space representation, as we call it, of this. Of the covariance of these two functions, f and g. What I don't have on transparencies is the following. If the underlying Boolean model is isotropic, then the formulas for the asymptotic covariance become surprisingly explicit, in particular in two dimensions. And they are very, very natural. And this came as a surprise when we had first seen this. If you're interested in, you can look up the paper on archive. Okay, now normal approximation. Indeed, we can use the Meyer-Weng-Stein approach to prove that the distance between the standardized intrinsic volume of order I and a standard normal distribution can be bounded by 1 over the square root of W, which is probably the optimal rate. And the way we use it in this paper with Daniel and Matthias is we control each of the summons of the Wiener Itokaes expansions as indicated before. So it's a little bit tricky. It's maybe more than a little bit tricky. You have to be very careful with the estimates, but it works. It works. And I skip this. And I say I take 5 minutes, okay, but feel free to interrupt me. I finish with the Boolean model. They take another 5 minutes for another benchmark model of stochastic geometry, which is the Poisson-Voronoi tessellation. In this case, the randomness, the source of randomness, is even easier. We have a homogeneous Poisson process in RD. No extra randomness, no extra grains. This is a realization here. And the Voronoi tessellation is a well-known object. Recall that it splits the plane, in this case, into convex polygons. And this cell, for instance, has the following property. All the points within the cells are closer to this point of the Poisson process than to any other of the points. Here is a formal definition of the Voronoi cells. So eta is the underlying Poisson process. If x is a point of eta, then the Voronoi cell is consisting of all points y which are closer to x than to any other point. So this is, even in general dimension, it partitions the space into convex polytopes. So there are cells, there are d minus one dimensional faces, there are d minus two dimensional faces. For k equal to 1, we have edges, and k equal to 0, we have the vertices. And I denote by x upper index k, the system of all k faces. And now we can do it again. We look at our favorite functionals of convex geometry, the intrinsic volumes of order I. And I'm sorry, there's an upper index k missing here. So I take the k faces. For instance, k equal to 1 in two dimensions, these are the edges. So I go through all the edges of my Poisson-Voronoi tessellation. So g is here one of the edges. And I intersect them with the observation window, and I get a functional depending on r, and of course on the chosen indices. And it's easy to believe that the variance of this functional increases proportional to the volume of R times W. So I'll use here a slightly different language than the one used in yesterday's talk, in Giovanni's talk. Actually, one can even prove the convergence of asymptotic variances, although it's not in our paper. Then the Wasserstein distance can be controlled in this way, but this time, to prove the result, we are using second-order Poincaré inequality in the following way. If you look up the general Poincaré inequality, you have to play around a little bit. We don't use it directly here, but we play with Hölder's inequality. And if you do this, then you see if we have boundedness of the fifth moment, we should have something more than 4 for our method to work. If you have boundedness of the fifth moment of the first and of the second difference operator, and we have it, and if you have this integrability assumption, which is somehow controlling the interaction between x and y. So in the end, interaction between points x and y should not get too large. That's an idea, by the way, you can also find in a paper by Chatterjee, how to use interaction graphs to derive bounds. And it turns out, using the stabilizing nature of this Poisson-Voronoi tessellation, we can bound these things in this way. Then we go to our second-order Poincaré inequality. There's no need, fortunately, to go through all the Kx expansion, and we get the bounds, which are optimal. And this Voronoi, the results for the Voronoi tessellation, as well as of the Boolean model, they have a history, of course. And maybe I should conclude my talk with a little bit about the history. So, for instance, Afram and Bertzimas studied the K-nearest neighbor graph. That they have also studied the Enschlags in a Voronoi tessellation, and they come up with rates. Without rates, you can use results by Lothar Heinrich on mixing properties of Poisson-Voronoi tessellation. But they have rates. Chatterjee is the one who has introduced the second-order Poincaré inequality, so he's introduced this idea. That's the paper with Daniel and Matthias on the Boolean model. These are some classical results. And I should mention that in both papers, in the paper with Daniel and Matthias, we treat multivariate distances, smooth multivariate distances. In our paper with Giovanni, it was just too much. We should have, we had to finish. This is the archive preprint of Matthias Schulte on the Kolmogorov distance. And I think that's it. And thank you very much for your attention. And I'm ready to ask, to answer questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have questions for them?
For asymptotic covariance, we don't have any finite representations such as that we have for example, additive functions. For example, if we look in some unit cube, half closed.
You're talking now about the Voronoi?
No. For Boolean. Asymptotic covariance. Asymptotic covariance of these intrinsic volumes of the Boolean model.
Yeah, let's start with the Boolean model. In this case, in the non-isotropic case, we have this infinite series representation, which is more explicit than you might think. Also, it's not just the original Fock space representation. But in the isotropic case, there are very explicit formulas. So you don't need to, we have asymptotic covariances, so that's why there are no W showing up anymore. Okay, the situation is, of course, much more complicated. Second moments are more complicated. But there's an explicit formula just involving the intensity and moments of first and second order of the typical grain, which is very natural. Okay. For the Voronoi tessellation, this is basically a stabilizing thing. So we know, in principle, how to write down the asymptotic covariances. So there's a formula for that, which is still a little bit abstract because it involves the addition of two further points. It's quite natural. I think you call it two-point correlation function. It's an integrated two-point correlation function. But you have to prove convergence in both cases. It's a little bit of work. In the Boolean case, we only treat the Wasserstein distance.
Let me say that the only paper, both in the Gaussian and Poisson literature, where you have explicit weights by controlling each copy, we never managed to agree with Gaussian.
Thank you.
For the
intrinsic volumes, with respect to a smooth distance introduced by Giovanni and others, and also based on the Stein-Meyer-Weng method. It's at least it's strong enough to imply, of course, the multivariate central limit theorem. But we have the same rates then. It's just everything is of the same order.
And do you have anything about the number of grains per connected component? For instance, the mean number of grains or the number of connected components with exactly k grains, for instance?
You mean we look at the connected components of the Boolean model and play with them? Not yet. I mean, this is in a sense, I advertised the intrinsic volume because these are beautiful functionals, but they have their limits. They are local in nature. And if you look at clusters and so on, that's more a global thing, and it's more complicated. But I believe in the maybe in the subcritical case, we should be able with some work to do it. But we haven't. I once started a little discussion with Matthew and Matthias while Matthew has been visiting us. But it's just a feeling.